Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made walking in a winter wonderland.
What a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning. This is the time that, you know, it's really enjoyable to be landscaping gardening. You don't ever break a sweat.
I know.
You know, your hands might get a little cold here and there, but I mean, that's nothing to for the trade-off of the nice weather.
I'd rather have a little cold hands to start with than to go out and not be able to touch the shovel because it's so hot. It burns your hands.
You got to wear gloves just
to pick it up.
For our trees, you know, you had mentioned citrus and, you know, worrying about, you know, not having a frost. When they get tall enough that you can't fit frost cloth over them, then what do you do?
Well, typically with citrus, we don't worry too much about the foliage. It's the fruit that we're trying to protect. And so most of the fruit is inside the canopy of the tree. And, yeah, it does pose a problem. Any, you know, big ficus trees, citrus trees. So, and it's got to get very cold, you know, 26 degrees or so for a few hours is it before you start damaging citrus too much. So when it gets, if we get down to that situation, what you're going to really try and do is keep the tree alive, wrap the trunk so the trunk doesn't freeze, and maybe the major limbs, maybe pick or harvest the fruit. And then a lot of times they'll run water, you know, very slowly water them all night long, because that will raise the temperature and the humidity level. You know, when we get to that point, we're kind of in survival mode. We're not trying to protect just the, you know, the aesthetic or the cosmetic appearance of the plant like you are covering a bougainvillea or, you know, a hibiscus or something, trying to keep it from frosting back or freezing too hard. And that brought up a point that Rosie asked during the break, is do you just lay the frost cloth on the plant or do you build a structure around it? If you can build a structure and not have the frost cloth actually touching the plant, that's the best. Because the frost cloth itself will eventually freeze, and wherever it's making contact on the plant will damage and freeze.
So, and I'm sure you've got some easy ways to do it. I just take 1x2s, drive them in the ground 2 feet tall,
yeah.
And then as I unfold it, I just staple it to the top of those so the wind doesn't blow it away.
Yeah, so yeah, you can.
It's really quick and easy.
It's pretty simple. And the stuff is light enough, it's not hard, you don't need help, you know, holding it up or doing anything like that. But yeah, little 1x2 redwood, what we call redwood stakes. They're probably not redwood anymore. Little wooden stakes, you know, 3-4 foot long. Put them in the ground deep enough they stay up and staple them to it. You know, you can get really exotic and build PVC structures and wire and different things to suspend it. But yeah, and that's a good point. That material is really light and a breeze can blow it. Now, if we're breezy, we don't usually worry about frost. But invariably, what happens? It's breezy till midnight
till
or 1 o'clock in the morning, and then, you know, then the stuff's laying off on the side where instead of where it should be, and then it frosts. You know, the coldest time of day is just right at and during sunrise, not the middle of the night, which is another good point. Don't get up and you're going to work at 6 in the morning and pull all your frost cloth off because you're going to work.
That's the coldest time.
Yeah. So leave it on. And then I said, if you use an actual frost cloth material, just leave it on for 3-4, you know, however long the event is occurring, and usually it's only a couple of days, just leave it on, and you'll be better off.
So, frost cloth, and it doesn't seem like something we need to talk about here very often, and we don't, but every now and then we do get that cold snap. It's been, I'm trying to remember, probably about 10, 12 years ago that we had one that, I mean, really just...
I know 2011... was really cold, and maybe 2013. There was about every other year there for a couple of years, you know, 4 or 5 years, 2011, 13, in there. We got super cold. I mean, it froze water fountains. It broke vacuum breakers on sprinkler irrigation systems.
By the thousands.
Yeah, just popped them open.
That was just after we had planted our first phase of our orchard. I was wrapped up like an Eskimo out there putting frost cloth on all these little 5-gallon citrus and fruit trees that we had planted. I mean, it was just it seemed like a couple weeks we were doing every single thing.
The whole
day.
City of Phoenix looked white, and it wasn't snow, it was frost cloth.
Frost cloth. So if it catches you out by surprise this year, it's don't say we didn't warn you first.
Right.
In our 9 o'clock hour, next hour, we're going to be talking about our top blogs and articles that over the course of this last year. Of the 8 that we're highlighting, 3 of those have to do with landscape and gardening, and one of them is about plants out of control, featuring primarily the sisu was the first one that was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's something to be aware of if it's in your landscape or gardening, identifying it and thinking twice before you cut it down, because that's really when
when it's growing, and people panic. They hear, "Oh, I have one of those," so they go cut it down. Well, now's when you got the problem. You weren't really going to have much of a problem while it was there growing, but man, they have got some type of survival mechanism built into them. You cut it down, and Katie barred the door. You know,
and they are a great tree. I mean, they've gotten a bad rap because
there's a place for them.
My neighbor's got a row of about 6 on one side and 4 on the other. It's incredible shade canopy.
Yeah, there's big properties, big open retention areas, retention basins. You know, there's still a place for them, but maybe not in a 4,000 square foot lot residential home. So.
And on the topic of plants out of control, I've started moving my pre-emergent lawn care to January. It may be a little early, but I hit it in January, and I hit it again in February to beat the spurge.
Yeah, it's the only way to really control spurge.
Man, it took me 4 years to get my lawn back.
Wow.
It just took over.
Now, once you're there, you don't want to let it go again.
Golly.
You know, on the note of pre-emergent, I wanted to ask you this question. The last time I put it down was in September, and then we had that little dry spell up until the recent rains. When should I put it down to avoid the weeds coming back? Because right now it's pristine. No weeds.
Well, we used to tell people, September, the first day of fall, first day of spring. So September, March. So sometime in February, maybe mid-January to mid-March would be your next application.
And you would put it down and water it in if you haven't had
any. You have to water
rain.
It in. Yeah. It has to get activated into the soil. Yeah, you can't just leave it up and wait for a rain. Now, if you can see rain in the forecast, and you can hurry up and go out there and get it on, that's great.
Writing that down.
how far ahead of the forecast? Because that's always been my problem with pre-emergent.
Well, not too far. Like, I would think 48 hours probably is as long as you'd want it sitting there without being watered in.
And if you've been in Arizona any amount of time, even when it's 100% chance of rain, it's not 100% chance of rain.
100% chance of rain that's going to rain somewhere in the forecast area.
Oh, you could sit there on your back patio and watch the cloud go right by, your neighbor get pounded, and you get nothing. Yeah. But that... when you say you don't have any weeds, Gary, you have weeds. That rain last week, everything's just moving a lot slower in growth. It's not like the monsoons where it rains and the weeds are sprouting the next day. That germinated and they're
well.
They're
the thing
starting.
Is, a lot of what'll happen with now is the winter moisture. It stays in the soil a long time, and as soon as it warms up, February or March, then that material will germinate. Because there's enough moisture in the ground. So, yeah, you want to make sure you get pre-emergent applied before we start to get soil temperatures warmed up to where that, we start to have germination of cool season weeds.
And on your pre-emergent, the the size of our properties is another challenge for us as well. And where do you start and what's important? And we can't do it all. Can you, on your 48 hours, is that a granular or liquid, or can it be both?
Well, certainly liquid, you want to get it watered in pretty quick. Granular, you probably got a little more time, you know, but I certainly wouldn't leave it out there for a week or so.
Yeah.
You know, you'd want to get, you know, if you got the ability to run some sprinklers or have a water tank or something that you can get on it behind it and get it watered in.
Rosie talked about his lawn taking 4 years to get back, and now he doesn't want to lose it. It took us months to regain our yard from cheese weed that had just taken over everywhere. I mean, we had a really wet winter, I guess that was 2 years ago, and we got back from a week trip, and I mean, it was just, you couldn't even find the kids when they walked out of the door. I mean, it took all spring long for us to finally get them all killed off, and now it's, you know, every weekend I'm out there and I'm spot treating and pulling, and we're not letting that
come back.
Well,
that stuff's huge, and it's hard to get. It gets big trunks on it. It's hard to get rid of.
Yeah. Oh, we had everything. I mean, I had an old-fashioned sickle. We had dragon, the weed dragons, the torches you hook up to a propane tank. I got a bush hog for the tractor. I mean, it was a full-on war. And now just, you know, every weekend I spend a half hour doing something.
Scouting for sprouts.
Hunting for weeds.
Yeah.
you don't want to ever have to recover after that. And, you know, we've got enough other things growing that we don't just let the goats and the horses and the cows out, because they would go eat
our
orchard first, and then they'd go eat the weeds second.
Yeah.
They never just
they'll eat get it, but they'll get everything else too.
First. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a lot of the stuff we grow, we don't want to use a lot of harsh chemicals. But then it's like, okay, over here, we've got shade trees and, you know, we're not growing anything to eat over there. So, you know, we're not.
You can be a little less selective.
Much less selective.
Yeah.
There's a reason that Roundup's so popular. It sucker works.
it does. And the economics of that, if we ever lose it, could be profound because, you know, of the time savings and the effectiveness of it. And, you know, that's a whole nother issue. We'll probably get some phone calls now.
1-888-767-4348.